From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. We're talking today about the La Crosse Promise, a community initiative providing educational scholarships in exchange for helping to stabilize La Crosse neighborhoods. The program has been in development for several years, and a number of major elements of the program have just come to life in recent months. Newsmakers senior producer John Davis spoke recently with Caroline Nielsen of the City of La Crosse, Carl Green of UW Extension in La Crosse County, and La Crosse Promise Executive Director Geralyn Dinsmore about the latest developments. While the La Crosse Promise is modeled on programs already working in places like Kalamazoo, Michigan and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dinsmore says there are several things that make the La Crosse Promise unique.
Most of the programs are targeted toward every single person that lives in a particular city gets the scholarship. Sometimes they're only good at their local technical college. If you live here, you'll get your first 2 years paid for at your community college. Some are good only at certain universities. Most of them require that you remain in your state. There's one in the gentleman that owns Murphy Oil in, is it Arkansas?
El Dorado, Arkansas,
has a fantastic program where those students can go anywhere in the country that they'd like to, and he'll pay for their tuition. But ours is unique in that it's tied to building, at least the first phase, to building a brand new home or renovating a home in a specific area.
Carl, I know you've done a number of studies since you've been involved in La Crosse County, but the one that maybe applies to this program more than any other is a study you did a couple of years ago about the cost of living in the city versus living in the suburbs.
I think the perception had been that, at least the perception I was hearing, was that the city's tax rate was driving families out of the city of La Crosse. And while I would argue that that's not always the case, or the majority of the time isn't the case, I wanted to at least look at taxes within the city. But what I really wanted to show was, uncover was, what are the true costs of home ownership, both living within the city and outside of the city? And while taxes are definitely a component of that home ownership cost related to place, there's other things associated with home ownership costs, such as your sewer charges. You know, your municipality has the ability, and most municipalities charge sanitary sewer as well as water. Oftentimes stormwater is included with that. And there's some municipalities locally that charge for garbage collection. There's various costs that people need to consider. Now, some people that might live in undeveloped areas or less developed areas, townships, might feel that those costs aren't something that they're exposed to. However, what I also did was looked at the cost of replacement of either a private well system or a private septic system, because that's really a cost that is going to be incurred at some point. And the homeowner needs to recognize that those systems are going to fail eventually. They're a mechanical system that has a certain life. And if they're not adequately either putting money away, saving for it, or amortizing somehow the cost of that, they're really not taking in the full home ownership costs associated with some of those lands. So what it really did was tried to look at both within unincorporated areas as well as some of the villages and cities in La Crosse County, the costs associated with it. And what we really found was that there was while there was a difference, there are some things that I think kind of also need to be considered, such as where the homeowners are working. Some of the difference in cost could be very quickly removed if there's some form of a commute required, as well as just the convenience. Again, I didn't obviously put that in as part of the analytical considerations, but there's really not as much of a difference between outside of the city and within the city as I think initially anticipated.
Do you feel that study is a good argument for this program?
The study helped to articulate the ownership cost. I mean, there's some people that preference-wise are going to just not want to live in the city, and we understand that. But I think that what the study helps to do is to illustrate and articulate that cost difference isn't as great as I think the perception was.
What about taxes? Because a lot of people just look at the property tax and, you know, that's the end of the argument right there. But if you put a $150,000 home on these lots, what are you going to be paying in taxes, and how does that compare to somebody in the suburbs?
Well, I guess our argument is we all know that our taxes are higher than on Alaskan Holman, and I think someone, Carl, did a study. You could eliminate all of our city departments, and our taxes would still be higher just because we're landlocked. However, the deal that we're making up for that in the deal that they're getting in the land value, and so, your cost of living is going to be a lot lower. So the person that is only going to make their decision based on taxes is probably not the one that's going to take advantage of the program. But the person who likes all the amenities that come with those taxes, such as alley pavings, lighting, good schools, our beautiful park system, our policing, the fact that you could call the fire department and they're just down the road, that is the person that's going to choose to live here. So I think, again, we're trying to be as cost efficient as we can. And again, it's not probably going to be the person that cares about that, but I think you're making it up in other areas, as Carl mentioned. So.
Geraldine, did you want to add something to that?
When I looked at Carl's study, I noticed that one area, village in particular, the real cost of living there compared to in the city of La Crosse for a $150,000 home, the difference was it was $100 more a month to live in La Crosse. And that's not looking at gas. So if you did commute into La Crosse to work, as the majority of the people who work in the city of La Crosse leave at the end of the day to outside of the city to go to bed at night. I mean, that's a lot of money in gas. So that's just, it's again important to just look at the big picture.
And then you add the educational component on top of that.
Right.
That you're getting back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, looking at just the taxes, you're leaving off some of the utility charges. Some municipalities, the city's utility charges are not the lowest, but they're considerably lower than some other municipalities, mainly because there's a larger population to kind of spread some of those utility charges over. However, unfortunately, this whole issue of the high taxes it feeds upon itself, because if more people lived in the city of La Crosse and there was greater tax base, the taxes wouldn't be as high as they are. The reason that the taxes are high, although there's always places that could be cut, as Caroline was referring to earlier, there's a certain amount of just core services, police, fire, road maintenance, that if you could eliminate just about every other city budget and you would still be higher than most surrounding municipalities. And the reason for that is basically this lack of tax base, not the fact that the city is just overspending. There's municipalities that on a per capita basis spend considerably more than the city of La Crosse, and yet their mill rate is considerably less, and that's because they have a significant more value per capita in their residential tax base. The city's residential tax base has basically stagnated over several decades, post-World War till now. And that's really what we're long-term trying to help the city get a handle on and to start to reverse that trend.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about what's new with La Crosse Promise, a program that ties future higher education scholarship with improving housing and economic development in the city of La Crosse. Our guests include La Crosse Promise Executive Director Geraldine Dinsmore, Carl Green, he's the Community Natural Resource and Economic Development Agent for UW Extension La Crosse County, and Caroline Nielsen, she's a Community Development Administrator for the City of La Crosse. I saw a couple of you at a recent employee benefit fair.
Mm-hmm.
selling this program. How important is that to the future of the program?
Oh, it's extremely important. Yeah, when you have donors and potential donors, especially watching this and wanting to jump on as soon as they see this catching on, you know, it's what we've all worked toward for some of them for 8-9 years or more. And so it's a pleasure to get out there and let people know about it. I mean, it's only launched 4 or 5 weeks ago. And but one of the ways that we try to get the word out to our ideal customer, which is a certain age and demographic, is through the human resource departments at some of the larger employers in town. Also, when they're recruiting employees from other areas, we want them to be able to pass along the availability of the scholarship. We're also talking with realtors this morning. Carolyn and I spoke to a realty group, letting them know how this could be a useful tool, and with the renovation piece in particular, marketing it in a wide variety of ways.
We've done a good job at trying to get that message out, and I know that, you know, we're pretty tireless in our efforts, and yet we'll still come across people. In fact, I think even today, there was somebody that said, I hadn't heard of this program before. So, you know, you're never done, I think, with some of that marketing. But I do think that we're also thinking that, you know, it's like the snowball metaphor, where eventually it starts rolling by itself. And I would anticipate that as we start getting more successes, that's going to breed success.
So who is your ideal customer?
It's most likely, in my opinion, someone that's currently 27 to 40 years of age. I think the couple most likely to do this would have children that are currently in elementary school or the lower grades of middle school. So there's enough time to make the investment. They're people that are quite certain that they want to remain in La Crosse over the long term. So obviously not a person that knows they get transferred with their job every 2 years and moves all over the country. You have to know you're going to live here. They are professionals. I think they tend to be people with a four-year degree or higher. They're people that are concerned about sustainability, and not just environmental sustainability, but also the tired of the rat race, of the commuting and the driving and shuttling kids, you know, eating supper, you know, in the fast food for supper in the backseat of the car as they run from one thing to the next. They like this idea of living really close to everything and just kind of having a more sustainable life. Also, people that aren't necessarily into the great big huge home, you know, with a 5-car garage. Maybe they saw their parents work toward that, but we're seeing a trend among younger people to really want to downsize and not have a huge yard to mow. You know, let's go to the park instead and, have a smaller home and less possessions.
So how long will it take to measure the success of this program? Are we talking, you know, if it took 40, 50 years for property values to decline in La Crosse, is it going to take that long for this program to operate to bring them back?
It's obviously it's a long-term strategy, and it's a marathon race, not a sprint. But on the other hand, I think that what we anticipate is that this, like I said before, success will breed success. And as we start to see more things starting to happen, just like what we're seeing in the downtown, that starts to get people to start to have more perception that there's less risk in that market. Any market is really a matter of risk perception. And with enough activity, I think that what you'll start to see is people having more confidence in these neighborhoods. As you start to get more connections developed within these neighborhoods, you're really benefiting everybody in the neighborhood, and it starts to have kind of a ripple effect, I think. And so how we gauge success is going to be dependent on how we measure that. Now, whether that's tax base, I think overall tax base Because even a whole neighborhood is still just a fraction of the city's overall tax base. You know, that might not be as much of a measurement that you would see short term, but what you would see short term, I think, is the number of new buildings going up, the number of promise applications coming in, you know, the number of homes being either significantly renovated or just newly constructed, because this area is fully developed for the most part, and so the amount of activity that you're currently seeing is very minimal. If you look at where are the new construction homes happening in the city of La Crosse, while there are few, there are hardly anything other than these the either Habitat or Coolie Cap homes within these neighborhoods. So we'll start to see of the 600 homes, if we can see 30 homes develop in a five-year period, I mean, that's huge compared to probably 30 years of activity in that neighborhood previous.
How do you define the success of this program from your perspective as La Crosse Promise Executive Director and La Crosse County and the city of La Crosse? Because you all come at this from a slightly different perspective.
From an economic development perspective, I would say we would know we had succeeded when people begin moving into this area without even needing the incentive of a scholarship. To me, that's when we would see that we had done enough incentivizing that it's that type of a draw.
Carl. Our goal has been that we try to have either constructed or rehab 10% of the housing stock in the neighborhood to be at the county median housing value.
You know, that's which is?
Which is about 155,000, okay. Just under 155,000. Probably average in these in Washburn and Paul Polk Hamilton, although they're different, it's well below that in more of the $100,000 to $120,000 range. You know, that at 10%, that is by no means a complete transformation, but that's a significant change. And really, these neighborhoods, like I said, there's a lot of benefits to them, and we see success as people starting to recognize those benefits and starting to see that these are places to invest, and that's ultimately what's going to help the city's tax base make a comeback, is when there's not areas that are kind of considered, you know, non-investment zones, because ultimately that doesn't do anybody any good.
Carolyn, how do you define success for the city of La Crosse?
Well, they both had excellent answers. The only thing I would add to that is we're tracking some metrics to know that we've succeeded when it becomes a mixed-income neighborhood. Right now, I think, you know, 20% of the families living in this neighborhood are in poverty. 75 to 80% of the students at the elementary school are on free and reduced lunch. So we know a neighborhood helps all children rise when it's a mixed income neighborhood. And where, you know, if there are low income families, they can feel successful because it's a safe neighborhood. They have social networks within their neighborhood that they can fall back on, an encouraging neighbor or mentor next door. So we'll know when we're successful when we see more stable homeowners in the neighborhood who are investing there. And again, like Geraldine and Carl said, when we see other people investing in the neighborhood without any incentive.
Does the success of La Crosse Promise go beyond the city of La Crosse? Does it help Onalaska? Does it help Holman? Does it help La Crosse County as a whole? And how do you sell that if, in fact, that is the case?
It's a great question. You know, Mayor Chilson of Onalaska is on our advisory board. And we, you know, because he understands, too, that there's a ripple effect. If the central business district or the central city deteriorates, it eventually spreads out to the rest of the region.
I would say that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the city represented over 50%, I think 54%, if I'm quoting the numbers correctly, of the county's tax base. Currently, it's about 34%. A big part of that although there's some of it is because of the growth that's happened in other communities, another part of that is because of the stagnation of the housing values in the city. While they've gone up, they haven't gone up as much, they haven't appreciated as much as other parts of La Crosse County. And that creates a greater fiscal burden of the county's mill rate to the people that are living outside of the city of La Crosse. So while there's growth in these other other outlying areas, the lack of growth in the city helps to create, basically it spreads that burden of the county taxes outside of the city greater. And so it definitely has an impact. Plus, I think, some of the issues that you see in the city in regards to concentrations of poverty or in regards to areas of dilapidated neighborhoods, it's only a matter of time before that starts to, spread into other municipalities. And I think you can see that in the Twin Cities, you can see that in most metropolitan areas, that the first ring suburbs, also start to see the same issues that happen in the central city. And therefore, where the central city goes, or the hub of the region, so goes the entire region.
Just one thing to add, one of our greatest assets when people come to visit, we're seeing 5 hotels being built in the city of La Crosse. So even when visitors come, they take a look, they might walk around the neighborhoods surrounding their downtown, and their impression of La Crosse is, what do those neighborhoods look like? So I think this will be a boost for regional tourism even.
I had a flashback as we were talking here. There's a comparison, I think, between the early efforts with downtown Main Street to revitalize downtown, and I was involved with that in the late 80s. And I remember at that time, people that had lived here all their lives just looked at us like we were crazy. Like, well, Dorflinger's moved out. It doesn't have a department store. Until you get a department store back, it'll never, get better. And now you look at where we are and how our strong downtown definitely benefits Holman, Onalaska, West Salem. I think in the same way we have, an innovative approach to revitalizing this area next to downtown that I think years down the road are going to see that it worked.
What does La Crosse Promise need now? It seems like everything is in place.
We need to get the word out. It's a difficult demographic to reach. They don't necessarily read the newspaper or watch the news every day. They tend to not be involved in clubs or organizations. So we're really counting on other people to help us spread the word. And if there's any opportunity we can get to speak to a club or business or group, just give us a call.
Gerilyn Dinsmore, she's the executive director of the La Crosse Promise. Also in the studio, Carl Green, community natural resources and economic development agent for UW Extension in La Crosse County, and Caroline Nielsen, a community development administrator for the city of La Crosse. They spoke with WPR's John Davis about the latest developments in the La Crosse Promise initiative. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers, where you'll also find a link to the La Crosse Promise. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff, that and more, at wpr.org/newsmakers. And that is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto.